Now I want very briefly to say something about the basic historical order of our subject. There are three great periods, you might say, in the history of the human race. One is what we call the primitive, period of primitive man, before writing. The period, and in some parts of the world it exists to this very day, of the non-literate societies, where people live very close to nature, very close in time. They have no records of earlier days. They live, the grandfather's time is already the mythological age. And then the great period that comes along about 3500 BC, beginning in the Near East in Mesopotamia, of the invention of writing, mathematics, the mathematics of the 60 by which we measure time and space to this day, and the mathematics of the decimal system and the sexagesimal system, the wheel, kingship, states, all that comes into being in a certain crystallization about the middle of the 4th millennium BC, and is diffused from Mesopotamia to Egypt, where it arrives around 2850 BC, to Crete, 2500 BC, to India, 2500 BC, China, 1500 BC, and to America with the Olmec people around 1200 BC. This is a diffused tradition of a totally different order from that of the primitive people. And then finally, post-Renaissance Europe, we have the coming into being of the scientific examination and experimentation and interpretation of nature, and the development of the power-driven machine, which has built a totally new world. Now, in the first period, I want to speak very briefly about certain basic attitudes that we find there. There are two main attitudes. One is that of the hunting people in the northern Great Hunt Plains, up where we are here in Canada, for example, in the United States, in northern Siberia, and northern Europe, where the hunt is the main order of life, and the food is brought to people by the men. You have a basically masculine psychology and sociology here, male-oriented. It makes a big difference whether the man is a good hunter or not. And since hunting people are continually in collision with other hunting people, he has to be a good fighter too. You have in these societies great stress on masculine prowess and a flattering of it. But the culture lives on death. They're killing animals, wearing animal skins, living in animal skin huts and so forth, in a world of blood. Among primitive people, the difference between the human and the animal levels is not regarded to be as great as it is by us. To kill an animal or to kill a man, there's not much difference. And so the psyche has to protect itself against this continuous killing, killing, killing. And the idea that becomes dominant and saves the situation is there is no such thing as death. That animal which you have killed will be back if you perform a certain rite. There's a rather charming myth, I think it's about time I told a little legend, that illustrates this point. This is of the Blackfeet Indians in Montana. They had a way, as you probably know, of driving buffalo herds over a cliff, a buffalo fall, and then slaughtering the animals at the bottom of the cliff. And this particular tribe was unable to get the buffalo herd, which was nearby, to go over the cliff. And so it looked as though winter were going to come and they would be starving without food. Well, one morning a young girl gets up to go out and get the water for her wigwam, and she looks up and sees the buffalo up there on the edge of the cliff. And she says, "Oh, if you'd only come over, I'd marry one of you." Oh, girls always think they're, well, it was quite surprising to her when indeed they all did come over. They were falling over, and that was kind of a fine experience until one old boy comes up and he says, "Okay, girlie, off we go." "Oh, no," she said. "Well," he said, "look what's happened here. And you said you would marry one of us, and come on." So off he goes with her, up the cliff and out onto the fields. Well, the family wakes up and look around, where's Minnehaha? And well, you know how Indians are, they can tell from footprints. And Daddy sees that his daughter's run off with a buffalo. And he said, "Well, for heaven's sake." So he goes and gets his walking moccasins and his arrows and all this sort of thing, and he goes off to find his daughter, following the trail. He comes presently to a buffalo wallow, where the buffalo like to roll around and get the ticks off and all that sort of thing, and he sits down to think a bit. And while he's sitting there, he sees a magpie come flying. And the magpie starts picking around. Now, the magpie is a very intelligent kind of bird, and it's a kind of shaman bird. And the man says to him, "Oh, beautiful bird, have you seen my daughter around here? She ran off with a buffalo." "Well," said the magpie, "there's a girl over there with the buffalo right now." "Well," he says, "you go tell her that her daddy's here." So the bird flies over and he starts picking around. Now there she sits, and all the buffalo are asleep, and the big boy's right behind her. And the magpie goes close and he says, "Your daddy's over at the wallow." "Oh," she says, "well, this is very dangerous. These buffalo will kill him. Tell him to be quiet and wait, and I'll come." Well, presently the buffalo wake up, and the one behind her, the big boy, says, takes a horn off, and he says, "Go get me some water." So she goes over with the horn, and there's Daddy at the wallow, and says, "Daddy, Daddy." He says, "I don't want you with these buffalo." "What's it? But this is very dangerous. We can't go running away now. You wait. They go back to sleep, presently." So she goes back to her buffalo boy, and he takes the horn and says, "Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Indian." And he gives a snort and a roar, and all the buffalo get up, and they prance around and do a buffalo dance. And then they go, and there's Daddy, and they trample him to death, not only to death, but to pieces, so that finally you can't find a bit of Daddy. So the girl's crying, and she says, "Oh, my Daddy." And the buffalo says, "Yes, yes, you're crying because your daddy's gone. One daddy. But think of us, with our wives and children and mothers and fathers, all for you and your people." "Yes," she says, "but Daddy, after all." And he was a kind of compassionate buffalo. And he said, "Well, I'll give you one chance. If you can bring your daddy back to life again, I'll let you go. I'll let the pair of you go." So she turned to the magpie and she said, "Would you hunt around and see if you can get a piece of Daddy?" So he starts picking around in the mud, and sure enough, comes up with a bit of Daddy's backbone. Well, the girl takes this bit of bone and puts it down on the ground and puts her blanket over it and starts singing a magical song. And presently, the same man is there under the blanket, not moving. She picks it up, looks. He's there all right, but he's not alive yet. So she sings some more. Presently, the man stands up. The buffalo are amazed, and they say, "Well, why don't you do this for us?" So a covenant, a pact, was made between the buffalo community, the animal community, and the human community. The human community was taught by the buffalo a buffalo dance, and this was the basic ritual of the buffalo killing culture of the American plains. This is the Blackfoot version of a myth such as we find among all these tribes, of a moment when the woman of the tribe and the shaman animal of the animal species have a compact, a kind of marriage of the two, and the buffalo give themselves as willing victims with the understanding that their blood will be returned to Mother Earth for rebirth. It's a basic myth of hunting peoples.